Good evening. I've been struggling with electronics for 2 weeks, and this is just sort of the crowning experience. So, new face. Welcome.
Okay, thank you.
How did you hear about us?
I used to go to the Bamboo in the Wind. And I used to live a couple of blocks from there, but now I moved to San Jose, so particular than go to the beach club there.
I see. Good. Well, you seemed like you knew what you were doing, so. Yeah, she's a wonderful teacher. Yeah. Well, we're studying the Vimalakirti Sutra, and we're in a chapter that things aren't going to work.
Well, and I think
yes, they are.
Well, but you know, I don't think this thing is actually working either.
Well, let's pretend it is, and let's see if we can do it. This is about opposites or non-dualism, entering the gate of non-dualism, it's called. And it's so interesting that it reminds me so much of an old friend I used to have, long gone now. She was old when I first got to know her, and she mentored me in poetry. She was a wonderful teacher. And in her dotage, before she ended up really unable, her mind started going to finding opposites and writing them down. She had a whole notebook full of them, and she would be excited when she discovered another one. Oh, not just black and white, but you know, cow and calf, or cat and dog. I'm not very good at it, but she got really, really good at it and just marveled at how these things appear in our mind, in our experience. And it's because there's a secret in it. And this is about the secret in those things, in those opposites, those, that duality that we notice with our minds. We're always picking things out and comparing them and figuring them out, what they are. It's part of our curiosity and our survival mode. We're very interested in how things all fit together. We have to be. It's how we can manage. So at that time, Vimalakirti said to the various bodhisattvas, "Sirs, how does the bodhisattva go about entering the gate of non-dualism? How do you get away from this mind that we have that is always comparing, judging and comparing? Let each one explain as he understands it." So one by one, this whole ton of bodhisattvas each has a piece of dharma that they bring up and explain as a duality, and then explain why it's really not dualistic at all. So it starts out with birth and extinction. I mean, the one thing that we're all very concerned about. And the answer to that is, since all dharmas are not born to begin with, they must now be without extinction. By grasping and learning to accept this truth of birthlessness, one may enter the gate of non-dualism. We think we're born and we think we're going to die. We see babies born and we sat at deathbeds and seen people die. And at the same time, we know that it's all a mind experience. It's all of a piece with everything else that is happening in our mind around the experience. It all belongs together as one thing. It isn't two. Birth always is death. Always, always. The next one is I and mine. But it's only because we say I. And as soon as we say I, we create a mine. And it's just an idea. The idea of I is an idea. We assert ourselves. And as soon as we do, we have a sense of possession. Oh, I have things. I have things. But where is that? That? I mean, there's no even having. So I won't go through all of these because it's there are a lot of them. And what it's doing is bringing up many, many aspects of the Dharma, Buddha's teaching, and examining it from the standpoint of how the mind is working and how stuck we can be around even these Dharmic principles if we think of them as opposites. So as soon as we start imagining things or thinking things through, we have to see things as opposites. But that's just one way that we think. And in Zazen, we begin to feel the other ways that we are thinking as well. The way to experience without judgment, without considering, without naming things. And without possessing them, to simply allowing them. So good and not good form a dualism, but if one does not call up either good or not good, but enters into the realm of the formless and masters it, in this way one may enter the gate of non-dualism. The formless. We're so caught by form. We're so entranced by form. And yet, the formless is exactly a part of it. Just as blame and blessing. The true nature of blame is no different from blessing. So these are all also a place of deep study, each one of them, to take them really into your own experience. It's a little bit like a puzzle, because at first you think, oh no, wait a minute. And then if you begin to live with it, it begins to open into a more unified way of thinking, or maybe a disunified way. It's hard to say. The worldly and the unworldly form a dualism, since the nature of the worldly is empty. The worldly, in fact, is unworldly. There's no going in and out of it. There's only one way to the gate of dualism. Or Cleary calls it a door. Going in the door of non-dualism. It's really what we do when we sit. Our first many, many minutes of sitting, maybe many, many hours, are, you could say, very dualistic. Many ideas are going through, many judgments, many problems, and we certainly know what is and what isn't as the way things are. But after a while, as our mind settles down, we become present. And those things just drift off. Even the notion of myself drifts off. It's like it kind of falls off. The I and the not I form a dualism, says Bodhisattva Universal Guardian. The reality of the self can't be apprehended. This is Cleary's translation. When one cannot even grasp even an I, how can one grasp a not I? The true nature of I will no longer give rise to these two concepts. So over and over, it's just conceptual. It's all about how we think. And offering us a new way of thinking, or reminding us that we can exercise and practice a new way of thinking, especially around the most crucial subjects of our life, life and death. I and you, enlightenment and ignorance. The Bodhisattva Lightning God said, enlightenment and ignorance form a dualism, but the true nature of ignorance is none other than enlightenment. This is really important. So many people think it's all about sitting down and getting enlightened and transcending all this junky life, this messy world that we're living in, but it's not the truth of it. This messy world is enlightenment itself. And of course, form and emptiness pop up in here, it has to. That's the essence of what we do. Form is essence. Emptiness. Emptiness is form. Emptiness does not represent the extinction of form. Form is itself empty by nature. Form is already empty. That's what that means in the Heart Sutra. And empty is already form. It's the same thing. Very hard to grok. Very hard to picture. But we can experience it. Then the four elements are not different from the element of emptiness or space. The four elements all are the same as form. They are empty. The Bodhisattva Wonderful Will said the I and the objects it observes constitutes a dualism. But the I, looking at objects, without greed or anger or stupidity, is called tranquil extinction. So it isn't that the objects don't exist, it's just that they don't exist in the same way if we don't look at them with greed or hate or delusion. If we accept them as they are, allow being, our being and all being, to be the same. All on the same level, you could say. So this leads, according to this wonderful will, Bodhisattva, to abiding in peace. So to speak of the Buddha, the law, and the assembly is dualistic, says Tranquil Roots. The Buddha is none other than the law. The law is none other than the assembly. These three treasures are all uncreated in form, like the empty sky, and all dharmas are the same. One who can act in accordance with this understanding may thereby enter the gate. It says one door of liberation is seen in all doors of liberation. So that was one of the earliest teachings I heard from Koban, that the three treasures weren't three different things, that there was the Buddha, and then there was the teaching, and then there was the Sangha, the community. In the tradition, it's the teacher and the teaching and the little group that meets, or the monks and nuns. But the truth is the Buddha is the Dharma. The teacher is the teaching. And the teaching all comes from the Sangha. And the Sangha is all coming from Buddha. And the Buddha is all coming from the Dharma, and the Sangha is coming from the Dharma. It's all on the same plane again. It's all one thing, and it's an action, it's an activity. It's not a thing, even though it's called a treasure. It's a living treasure, an organic living treasure. And we feel it. We walk in the Zendo and we feel it. The Dharma's here. The teaching is here. Darkness and light, Bodhisattva moon in mid-air. Darkness and light form a dualism. If there's no darkness and no light, there will be no dualism. It's like entering the meditation that wipes out perception and conception, where there's neither darkness nor light. And the forms of all dharmas are the same as this. If one enters this state and views all with equality, one may thereby enter the gate of non-dualism. Treasure sign says to yearn for nirvana and not delight in the world constitutes a dualism. And again, this is that old thing about setting it up so this is something special and very pure, and the world is something yucky and that we're trying to get out of. To yearn for nirvana and not delight in the world constitutes a dualism. But if one does not yearn for nirvana and doesn't loathe the world, there will be none. why there's no there. If there's binding, there will be unbinding. If there is no binding to begin with, who will seek to be unbound? And where there's no binding and unbinding, there will be no yearning and no loathing. And in this way, one may enter the gate of non-dualism. Yearning. So we are bound. Of course, we're bound, and we keep getting unbound, sometimes by banging it up against a wall. The bindings fall off, or sometimes we see through what we're creating. We create our bindings, and we uncreate them too. And in either case, it's simply a function of our own mind's operation, function of our yearning and our loathing. So the correct way and the erroneous way certainly constitute a dualism. You're either right or wrong. But one who dwells in the correct way doesn't make distinctions saying this is a mistake or this is right. Removing oneself from both is walking through the door of truth. So the next one is the delight in truth said, the truth and the not true form a dualism. But one who sees truly cannot even see the true. So how can he see the untrue? Because they can't be seen by the physical eye, only the eye of wisdom can see them. But for this eye of wisdom, there's no seeing and no not seeing. The eye of insight is without views, without ideas. In this way, one may enter the door. So when the various bodhisattvas had finished one by one giving their explanations, they asked Manjushri, how then does the bodhisattva enter the gate of non-dualism? So Manjushri is kind of the boss, you should know. And Manjushri said, well, everything you said is dualistic, leaving out one prescription. What is impossible to talk about, impossible to say, is unspoken and impossible to state, beyond representation. You can't say it. That is the entry into non-duality. Then Manjushri said to Vimalakirti, each of us is given an explanation. Now, sir, it is your turn to speak. How does the bodhisattva enter the gate of non-dualism? At that time, Vimalakirti remained silent and did not speak a word. Manjushri sighed and said, excellent, excellent. Not a syllable. This truly is to enter the gate of non-dualism. The preaching of no words. When this chapter on entering the gate of non-dualism was preached, 5,000 bodhisattvas in the assembly were all able to enter the gate of non-dualism and to learn to accept the truth of birthlessness. So this little chapter is filled with a kind of challenge to all of us. In one sense, it's a challenge to shut up and stop depending on words so much. And it is to study the Dharma and to study these dualisms and how they appear in our life so that we can make more cogent understandings and decisions about how we live, rather than always falling down on one side or the other side, to find a way to live in the middle. Basically, that's what this is about. So I saved a little time for questions and discussion. What's on your mind? Yes.
Question. So, how would you explain birth versus to somebody who maybe doesn't know what, because you're so caught up in the dualism of birth and death?
Yes. I don't think you can explain it. I think you can encourage people to make that a source of deep study. In Zen, that's one of our big questions. What is this death thing that we're facing? And Dogen calls, you know, talks about firewood and ash. It's really untalkable, and yet it's the most crucial question for us, and it's scary. It's very scary, and for people who are dying, it's very scary. So it takes a lot of study, I think, and courage to really look at it. And I'm reminded that we didn't give names all the way around, so we don't even know your name.
I'm Claire.
Claire. And?
I'm Ellie.
Jeffrey.
Ito. Wendy.
It occurs to me that if you experience emptiness, you cut through all of it all at once. That as soon as the mind stops creating all these dualities, you're not there.
Yes. Yes.
The questioner and the question evaporate. Because keeping it that way is more entertaining.
Oh, it's more fun.
Yes.
Yes, it's more exciting.
Mind come back.
There's lots of drama in it.
Right.
Oh, is it good or is it bad? Yeah. Am I right or am I wrong? Yeah. We torture ourselves with it sometimes.
Yeah, there's that saying that people like love to hate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a big deal in our culture.
Mm. Mm.
Seems to be getting more. That it's a big human tendency to take sides. It's because we're afraid, and we feel more secure if we feel like we're on the right side. Of course, it isn't secure at all. It isn't in the least bit secure. But unless we work out what security really is, we're kind of afraid all the time. That's where birthlessness comes in as a very important subject. Well, we're getting ready for Sesshin, which starts on Friday evening. And which is why the group is so small.
Yeah.
Scrambling around trying to get ready. And it's been beautifully arranged. I laughed to myself this afternoon as I saw Wendy's beautiful printout of who's coming and how long they're staying and where they're going. Everything is all planned beautifully. And our first sessions were at Hidden Villa when we took an old hostel, youth hostel, and moved all their furniture out and just put cushions on the floor. And we didn't know who were coming until the first night. We always asked people to sign up, but nobody ever did. They just showed up. We never knew what kind of food to buy, and we never had enough money to buy very much food anyway, so it was all very hectic and by the way, and yet they were incredibly powerful sessions at the same time. We just sat and sat and sat. But I'm very glad we're not doing that anymore. it was a strain. And Chi Coaching was that way in the early days too. Very much, actually. But we have a good cook and a good set of menus, and it really looks fine. Really fine. Thank you very much.
An announcement. It was a very poor evening to bring all my magazines, but as I'm downsizing and in all ways in my life, I brought a lot of tricycle magazines, which I offer them to anyone who will find a new home for them.
Mm-hmm.
And right behind that will be books. And
you're really serious, aren't you?
I'm very serious.
I see.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But anyone is welcome to my tricycle.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Jeffrey.
They may be coming back for a better audience.
Yes, so we need to make arrangements for next Tuesday night, since not a lot of us won't be there here Tuesday. And does someone with the key, are they able to open? I don't think you really need to set up. You can just
sit on the Quaker's chairs.
I'll be here. I'll open up.
Great. It'd be nice. Nice to think of you all.
Thinking of you all.
Yes. Suffering.
Right. And it is an open session, so if you find yourself with extra time during the day, you can come on up. And it's best to call Jacoji's phone number and leave a message if you're going to eat a meal. So we'll have a space for you. Now there's lots of cushions, there's extra beds. Probably a lot of food too.
Okay, so we have our 1 minute sit.